Hello there. This is Sam Jones, Flash Gordon, and Denny Colt, a.k.a. The Spirit.
This is Luther Rickno, the Incredible Hulk, speaking.
Hey, comic book fans, this is Charlie Schlatter, The Flash, from Justice League Action.
Hey there, comic book fans, this is Paul Soles, Spider-Man, from the original animated series. And you're listening to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. Wallop and web-snappers.
Greetings, pop culture, sci-fi, and comic book fans, lovers of all that is geeky and cool. Welcome to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. I'm your host, Joe Stuber. I am back. I am tanned. I am well rested. I am back behind the mic, ready to talk to you folks out there. Had an amazing time visiting New England last week. Built a relaxing vacation into the lead up to the pop culture and comic book extravaganza that is Terrificon. Now, as many of you know, my podcasting buddy from the IndieCast over at theindiecast.com, Mitch Halleck, he puts on a comic book convention every August in Uncasville, Connecticut at the beautiful Mohegan Sun. The show gets bigger and better every year. I've been taking Comic Book Central on the road to Terrificon for the past few years to get my geek on, to buy some merch, collect more comics, and of course, to record interviews and moderate Q&As with some of the talented folks who bring our favorite comic book characters to life. Not only do I moderate those Q&As that weekend of Terrificon, but I bring that audio to the speakers and earbuds of you loyal Comic Book Central listeners right here on the show. So this is Terrificon week on Comic Book Central. Five episodes coming at you fast and furious over the next week. Man, get ready to get your geek on. By the way, if you follow Comic Book Central on Facebook at facebook.com/comicbookcentralnetwork, don't forget the network, and Twitter at comicbookctrl, I will be posting my pictures from Terrificon. I took a bunch of them this year. So much going on. Give me a little bit of time to get that album up on social media. There's so much to do, but give me a little bit of time to get those up. But if you follow the show on social media, you're going to be able to see those pictures. Trust me, you are going to love them. All right, a little bit of background on my trip. Started the vacation off with my lovely wife at Tanglewood. That is the summer home of the Boston Pops. That is where we got to see and hear Film Night with John Williams. Yes, the legendary composer. He was there conducting the Boston Pops. Perhaps some of you heard the live stream of the concert. That was amazing. They did a live stream and then they did one rebroadcast of it. I didn't get to hear the Superman theme when I saw Maestro Williams conduct the Cleveland Orchestra earlier this year, but we got Superman at Tanglewood, man. Yes, we did. He opened with it. Yeah, of course. Look, I got emotional, man. 40th anniversary of the film, right? 40th anniversary of my favorite soundtrack of all time, the greatest soundtrack of all time. It was amazing. And by the way, my wife and I are also 2 for 2 for Duel of the Fates from Star Wars Episode 1 at Tanglewood, man. He did 5 Star Wars pieces. He did pieces from Close Encounters, Amistad, so much more. Fantastic way to start our vacation. And speaking of John Williams, closed it out at Terrificon, where I took part in the IndieCast John Williams panel with my fellow IndieCasters, Laird Malamed and Ron Longo. They produce a ton of John Williams specials over at the IndieCast. Been talking to Ron forever, but I got to meet Ron for the first time at IndieCast this year. That was pretty cool. Old friends meeting for the first time. That was fun. And Mitch Halleck, he was able to break away from running Terrificon. I don't know how he found the time, but he joined us for the panel as well. Nice little group of John Williams fans were present at the panel. We talked about the Maestro. We played some live music. We took some requests. You can hear the IndieCast presents the magic of John Williams recorded live at Terrificon over at the IndieCast at theindiecast.com. Be sure to check that out after you listen to today's episode. Of course, if you subscribe to Comic Book Central, if you subscribe to the IndieCast on iTunes, then you've got all those episodes already. So, man, so much goodness out there. Today, I begin my five-part look back at Terrificon. On today's show, you're going to get quick hits with a bunch of guests in attendance. I'm going to catch up with some old friends of Comic Book Central. I'm going to meet some new ones. Those interviews are coming at you in just a moment. Then all next week, bonus episodes of the show featuring my Q&As with the stars who were in attendance. Here we go. From Spawn, Black Dynamite, and he's coming back to Arrow this season, Michael Jai White. Then talking about Guardians of the Galaxy and Avengers Infinity War with the talented actress who brings Mantis to life, Palm Clementieff. Following that up with an epic 6-guest panel of animation voiceover actors. Here we go. Here they are. Greg Sipes and Kari Payton from Teen Titans Go. Raphael Ferrer from Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic. Thundercats' Larry Kenny. And Friends of Comic Book Central, Charlie Schlatter, who is the animated Flash, as well as Kick Buttowski. And the legendary actor behind the voice of Hermie from Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. And the very first actor to bring Spider-Man to life, Wallopin' Web Snappers, the great Paul Soles. He joined us on the panel as well. And if that's not enough, I closed out that magnificent marathon. That's right, it was a 4-hour block on Sunday. Closed it out with none other than Solomon Grundy from Gotham, Drew Powell. That was fun. And I will say this to you folks listening out there, on two of those panels, you're going to get a Golden Girls TV theme show sing-along. That happened twice at Terrificon. I'm going to be bringing it to you next week. So much happened, so much to get to. Look, if you missed out on it this year, look, I'm going to be bringing as much to it as I can to you right now. But if you want to make plans for next year, you got to be at Terrificon, right? Terrificon.com, that is the place to be. That's the website. Mitch is working on next year's show already. He's getting guests lined up already. I'm going to put the links to the event in the show notes for this episode on my website, comicbookcentral.net, as well as the show notes at blogtalkradio.com/comicbookcentral. So check them out. Okay, kids, let's get to today's guest. First up, a comic book convention has to have some comic book men, right? Of course it does. And the stars of AMC's Comic Book Men, they were there. They just wrapped things up on AMC after 7 seasons of the show. Great run. I caught up with Comic Book Men's Ming Chen to talk about that experience and what's next. If it's Terrificon, you know the comic book men are going to be somewhere nearby. Ming Chen's always nearby. Ming, good to see you again.
What's up, everybody? We're actually making our glorious return. We were not here last year. We were announced, scheduled. We were about to go, and then we get a call from a little company you may have heard of, and they make these weird little toys that nobody buys called Funko.
Yes.
And like, hey, we're going to make Funko Pop figures of you. We're going to debut them. And it happened to be the weekend of Terrificon, so unfortunately...
You had a good excuse for not being here. Mitch let you out of it?
Oh, no, he didn't. He's still mad.
He's still mad.
He doesn't understand, but, you know, partially might be jealousy that he doesn't have a pop figure of himself, and partially that, you know, we bailed a week beforehand.
He may have his only... He may have
he's
a custom.
He's probably got a whole room,
he's probably done a custom.
Room of them, yeah.
I think there's a Mitch action figure somewhere. Hey, congratulations. I know, bittersweet. Congratulations, by the way, though. 7 seasons of Comic Book Men. In all honesty, I mean, when shows get on, people are hoping for 1 season. You guys got 7 seasons.
Yeah, I didn't think we'd make it past 1. And when I heard we got 2, great. And 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, that's a lot.
It's amazing. And all the people that you guys got to meet at the stash. I mean, okay, top 3 moments.
Well, hold on. Let's name a couple of them in this very room who have been on the show.
Right, they're standing right around, yeah.
Yeah, we have Lou Ferrigno. And we have Ralph Macchio, alumni, Comic Book Men alumni. There are probably a couple of creators who have been on the show as well.
You had Stan Lee's been there. I mean, you had Lindsay Wagner. I think the last time we spoke, Lindsay was, her episode was just coming on.
Yeah.
I mean, you got the chance to meet the Bionic Woman. That's pretty amazing.
It's one of the best things ever. Yeah. And then she does cons as well.
Yeah.
We started a convention and, you know, we were like, all right, she came in, you know, she shot for about 4 hours. It was a year, you know, a year had passed. And we were like, is she going to remember us? And right when she got there, she ran up to us like, hey, it's my boys. Hey, points over it all. So, tonight, gentlemen, we're having dinner to get together tonight. Well, I'm like, yeah.
Oh, you actually had dinner with Lindsay Wagner?
She invited us to dinner. What the hell, man? Oh, holy crap.
Yeah. You got on the bonus plan on this one. So
yeah.
What did you learn? So all these years doing Comic Book Men, what's your takeaway from it? What did you learn, and how are you going to apply that? What's your next project going to be?
I learned a couple of things. One, that the stuff that I love, that I used to get made fun of for and, you know, get beat up and tortured and taunted. No more, man. We, you know, now
somebody
everyone loves
will
all
pay
that
you
stuff.
For it. Yeah,
yeah. And now everybody loves that. And I knew it was going to happen. Right. You know, it was only a matter of time when. And I had to wait a long time. You know, it was about 40 years for that to happen. But it happened, and I love it.
And what's next? I mean, what are you gonna? What are you gonna
do for money?
What are you gonna? Well, how are you gonna pay the rent?
Well, you know, conventions. Conventions are good money. So yeah. I'm gonna go
but
to.
But you got the podcast. I mean, you guys are like podcasting like crazy.
Yeah. Well, so me and Mike opened up a podcast studio. So it's a very new venture in the realm of new entrepreneurial ventures. It's a recording studio, but specifically in catering to podcasters. So a very new idea. We're just trying to make it catch on and. We've launched over a dozen shows since we've been in business, and just trying to get more.
Where's the online home for them? Where do
it
we
is,
go to find them?
You go to ashareduniverse.com. It's called the Shared Universe Podcast Studio. A Shared Universe is many references. One, Mike came up with it. He was like, you know, it's like the comic books. All the universes are shared. You know, like the Marvel Cinematic Universe. All the characters share their same universes, but in the podcast world, everyone talks about a way different topic. This is their space to come and share all of them.
You guys are entrepreneurs now. You guys are businessmen.
Crazy.
You segued this.
It's crazy.
Did you ever think you'd be doing this?
No, not at all. Right. Yeah, no, I thought I'd be working for the man, you know, for the whole time. I don't want to work for the man anymore.
No, you
man.
Work for you. Yeah. You're the man.
I want to
be the man.
I want to be, yeah, to beat the man, you got to, you know, to be the man, you got to beat the man.
That's right.
Ric Flair said that, and he was 100% right.
You did it, man. Congratulations on everything.
Thank you,
again, congratulations on the amazing
Thank
run.
Thank you.
I enjoyed all the episodes.
Thank you very much.
Looking forward to everything you got coming up.
Thank you so much.
ashareduniverse.com. That is the website. Check it out. Lots of good stuff to be heard there. Great website, great podcast. Check them out. All right. Fan favorite, Sam Jones from Flash Gordon fame. He was back at Terrificon this year. You might recall I've chatted with Sam a few times right here on the show. Longtime friend of Comic Book Central. In-depth interview on episode 59. So you want to check that one out if you haven't already. A quick chat with Sam at Wizard World Columbus. That was on episode 139. And then a few episodes later on episode 145, that was my Terrificon Q&A with Sam where we talked about the documentary he was involved with. It's called Life After Flash. I caught up with Sam at this year's Terrificon for the latest.
All right, it is Terrificon fan favorite. He is the savior of the universe. He saved every one of us. Mr. Sam Jones. Sam, welcome back to Terrificon.
Joe, good to be back with you.
Man, this is so good to see you here again. Okay, first of all, can you give us an update on Life After Flash? I'm seeing all kinds of postings about it. I'm seeing they're getting, looks like they're adding more and more interviews to this thing all the time. So what's the latest?
Yeah. Well, I think we have a really good edited version down to 90 minutes, which I really like. It really moves now. And I think we're getting ready to cut the deal. Yeah, we're ready. I mean,
is this looking like a Blu-ray, like a Blu-ray release? Are we going to be able to buy this as Blu-ray? Is this going to be on a streaming service?
We're in the middle of all that negotiation.
Got it.
Right
so
now.
We could see it on Netflix. But, we could see it on something like that coming up here pretty soon.
Yeah, but the good news is we've got it edited down to where it should be. It moves really well. It's got a very strong, impactful message.
Are you part of the process of the edit? Like, are you sitting down with the editors?
No,
are you looking at any of this stuff?
No,
or are you?
No,
are they sending you stuff?
We always talk, approve this and that.
Okay.
We started out, I think it. I think we've trimmed 20 minutes off of it.
Wow.
Which really moves well now.
What's been your favorite part of the process? Kind of going back through, because I know. Yeah, we're reliving something from, you know, quite a while back. I'm pretty sure we're digging in the recesses. I've done that with you on Comic Book Central to ask you to remember all these things. But what's been your favorite part of this whole process of kind of reliving this amazing film?
Well, I think just the unknown. You know, when someone comes to you and says, hey, we want to do a documentary about your life. Well, that's kind of disconcerting because I have a lot more years, I believe. but you can't really write the script until you're done filming. You have an outline that you follow, but you never know what you're going to capture until you roll camera or until you roll sound.
What surprised you the most?
The issues of life is what I call it. What I see, a lot of people, yeah, it's entertainment based, but really for me, I call it the do's and don'ts of life. That's really how I see it. Because for me to reach people, I had to be transparent. I had to tell people almost on all my tough decisions. This is the decision I was faced with. This is what I chose to do, why I chose it, and this is and these are the consequences that followed, and this is how I dealt with those consequences. So not only did you get that from me, but when they started to interview all my children, my kids said, hey, Dad, and I got five of them. They said, Dad, what should we say? I said, just look in the camera or look at the interviewer and just tell the truth.
Yeah.
And because they told the truth, you know, a lot of it wasn't pretty. A lot of it was, you know, it's amazing. It's amazing to hear or to see what your family and what your friends have to say about you. The ones who really love you and care about you, they tell the truth, good or bad.
What was the thing from your castmates that may have surprised you the most? Was there something that you just completely forgot filming?
Well, you know, Mark Wahlberg, he just had a, they threw the camera in front of him. He was at a red carpet. And they said, hey, are you a fan of Flash Gordon? And he's walking with his wife. He turns the camera and he says, not Flash Gordon, but Sam Jones. Yes, I am.
Nice.
That was really, and that was sort of, nice. I mean, a lot of people, Flash Gordon obviously was what catapulted me into that. But people didn't really know me as the person through Flash Gordon. So, so that's what you're going to get. You're going to get the entertainment side, what that whole business is like, and then you're going to get the, you know, what the real person's.
You kind of have a good chemistry here with Seth MacFarlane and Mark Wahlberg. Is there something else that we can look forward to? Is there like a Ted 3 or something else?
Well, we're signed for Ted 3, but we signed that back during Ted 2.
How about the Orville? Can are we maybe see you popping up on the Orville?
Why not? You know, but I don't call the shots. I mean, I'm just the actor.
Piloting your own ship?
On this particular project, it's not mine.
Okay.
But past 18 months, we've done 6 films. You know, a lot of it, all independent. One being Life After Flash. So we got some good projects coming up.
Where can we find these? What's the next thing you've got coming out that we can look forward to? And how can we find out about it? Social media?
Yeah, I think if you go to Life After Flash, all of that comes up.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then on your social media pages, any projects you've got coming up?
On Facebook and Twitter and all that good stuff.
Okay.
But if you go to lifeafterflash.com, that leads you to everything else.
And any chance we could see you talking about The Spirit or maybe doing some appearances
Why
with
not?
Nana Visitor coming up or something?
Why not? Why not?
That would be nice to see that, too.
I got a picture of her.
Is Nana in there?
There she is.
There she is. We got to put that one out.
Yeah.
That's the one we got to put out. Because you, the square-jawed hero, man, it does not get any better than that. So, Sam, my friend, thank you so much
All
for
right, Joe,
talking
thank
today.
You.
And I really appreciate this.
Absolutely.
Thanks.
LifeAfterFlash.com. That is where you go to find out more about that incredible documentary. Man, I'm looking forward to watching that. All right, another friend of the show, Charlie Schlatter, he was there. He made his Terrificon debut this year. You can hear my in-depth interview with Charlie on episode 161. Got to meet him face-to-face the day before that epic Terrificon animation voiceover Q&A. Now, since I last spoke with Charlie, he revealed publicly a battle that he had been fighting in private for over a decade. That was right after my interview with him premiered. Came out on Facebook. A lot of you folks know about that. So we chatted about that at this year's show. By the way, during this interview, there is a brief cameo from a previous Terrificon attendee. So check it out.
So this is the day before the panel, the voiceover panel. You will be here for the voiceover panel, I'm told. So you're going to be a featured performer.
I will be. You never know what's going to happen, though, here at Terrificon.
Are you going to be doing voiceovers during the panel? I think that's the question voiceover artists always get.
You know, I have no idea.
I think you said it's kind of like a variation of your voice.
Yeah. But I just go and, you know, honestly, if they want me to do it, I do it. If they don't, it always, you know, whenever you do these panels, they just kind of dictate what goes on.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think we'll be there to answer any questions. I don't even know what it's about, but like I said, I just go where they tell me to go.
I'll take good care of you. I'll be running the panel.
I will
take good care of you. Plus, we've got a lot of support. You've got your fellow voiceover artists here.
Yeah, and they're fun guys.
So what's been this experience for you? Because I know, I mean, we've seen you in a lot of like live action dramas and things, but man, this whole universe of comic book fandom and sort of pop culture comes into it because you've done The Flash in different variations. You've done so many Kick Buttowski and different things.
Yeah.
What's been this experience for you as compared to like maybe some of your live action stuff that you've done?
Well, I have to say the people who come to see the voices of of cartoon characters, they're really smart and they read a lot and they actually read the credits. That's how they know who's doing these voices. And man, they just know more about your career than you do. And they start telling you, do you remember you did this character? And it's like, no. And then you Google it and you go, damn, that kid was right. I was in that show. And that's who I, you know, they're very astute fans. You know, for the most part, you do the on-camera, so they're like, oh yeah, I recognize you. You did some funny stuff. But these guys, like cartoons and animation, it really means a lot to so many of the people who come to these conventions.
Well, and it's
really nice.
It's the characters that have the history too, so you become part of that history, part of that legacy.
Oh, totally, yeah.
Part of it. So that's actually pretty cool too.
And one of the great things I have to say is that, you know, I always say that a lot of times when we record these cartoons, it's in a vacuum. You record it alone behind a glass window with older, you know, directors, and you know, you never meet the people who you're affecting, who like love it. So you come here and it's all of a sudden you see these kids who know quotes of yours, and there was a kid who was impersonating me for like 10 minutes, who's out to steal every one of my jobs. A little bastard.
Is he pretty good?
You know, yeah. But it is. It's really neat to see that go down.
Now, since we last spoke on Comic Book Central, a lot of life-changing event for you, and you've got a new social media page, and you're sort of talking about these things. So since we last spoke, sort of bring our listeners up to date on what's been going on in your life personally.
Oh, the leukemia thing?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Well, this year I was named Man of the Year by the Leukemia Lymphoma Society. I raised over $350,000 for that cancer research and for that organization. Now I'm on the board, and I got to go and do things. But it was a pleasure to do it. I was nominated by a woman named Mindy Sterling from all the Austin Power movies, and she does tons of animation as well. Mrs. Ciccarelli from Kick Buttowski.
Yeah.
And it's because I'm a cancer survivor myself. I've had chronic myeloid leukemia for 12 years, and I played it really close to the vest. I didn't tell many people. You know, one person I told when I was first diagnosed was my theatrical agent. And a couple days later, it was like, hey, Charlie, listen, we're thinning the herd over here at the agency. We're going to let you go. So thank God for voiceover. And thank God I had people who just didn't care, you know, but did care. Yeah. You know, and it's weird. It's tough. Cancer is one of those things where people still think it's contagious, or they think that you're going to die in a second. And I certainly did. When they said you had leukemia, I thought, you know, my card is punched, man. This is it. My last dance. But no, there's been so many advances in research and whatever that. So when I was nominated to do this campaign, I said I got to go all in and do the best I could. And so yeah, I won. What you win, you get a sash, which is pretty, and a tiara. But that came 2 days later, just from my campaign manager. She's like, I really think you need this, so I keep that next to the award.
Yes. No, I think this was right after we spoke. It wasn't long after that you had come out about that. And I was really surprised because I didn't know you had any health situations at all.
Don't feel bad. Even my kids didn't know. I mean, honestly, wow. I didn't tell my kids. My oldest daughter found out like a few years later because she's a nosy little thing. And she was at her doctor's office, the pediatrician, and she's like reading files and stuff. And she goes, Dad has leukemia.
Oh, my.
And Mom, isn't that like cancer that everyone dies from? So we had to have that conversation. And then even my son, I didn't tell him until like a couple of years ago. They just know that I take medication for like a blood thing and blah, blah, blah. Because I never wanted their lives to be about their dad having cancer or, you know what I mean? You just want them to have a worry-free childhood.
I'm trying to protect them.
Are you a dad? Are you?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
But I mean, I totally get the protecting aspect of it.
Is
that something that cares about you and it's like, this is my thing. But in coming forward, though, you did come out with this. How has that been beneficial? Because now all of a sudden you've got this community around you.
Yeah, it has been beneficial. Oh my God, I'm so sorry, but you got to look over to your right. This is insanity. What's going on in front of us now?
Talking about the giant Hulkbuster has walked by.
That thing is insane. Can he park that here?
A couple of years ago, they did a dance party with him and Katrina Law.
Oh really?
Katrina Law and him got. If you look at YouTube, Katrina Law, Hulkbuster, enjoy it. I've just made your weekend there.
And that's what it's called, the Hulkbuster?
The Hulkbuster, yeah.
That is amazing. That takes time to make something like that.
It does, and he got it all in the elevator. Yeah, it all collapses down.
Collapses
and then he comes out of the elevator like a transformer, yeah.
Oh, that's amazing.
It's pretty amazing.
Oh, but I was going to say, one of the amazing things about this whole coming out thing and trying to raise money was that it enabled me to get in contact with people that I haven't spoken to in a long time. And when I did make that announcement, all these other people came out of the woodwork to say, how are you, man? Even guys like Judd Apatow, you know, just really great, great people came back into my life. So
where do we need to go? Website, social media? How can we find out more about this and how can people help?
You, right now, you know, if you go to my Facebook, just a Charlie Schlatter on Facebook, however you find people, because I'm not like terribly tech savvy and, you know, I've got an
Instagram. We'll put the link up.
Oh,
and
on my Instagram, it's just Charlie Schlatter on Instagram. So whatever that is.
I'll help you out. I'll put the link up.
And they could see it. There's a link that directs you to like the webpage to donate to the LLS charity. So, and that should be up until the end of the year.
Enjoy your weekend. I'm looking forward to the panels.
Thanks,
tomorrow.
Brother.
It's going to
be fun.
And thank you so much for joining me again on
no
Comic
worries,
Book Central.
Man. See you tomorrow.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Next week, Charlie is part of my 6-guest Terrificon animation voiceover panel. Again, if you haven't subscribed to Comic Book Central, what in the world are you waiting for? There's some good stuff heading your way. You don't want to miss out on it. Subscribe to the show on iTunes. Follow it on Facebook and Twitter at blogtalkradio.com/comicbookcentral, facebook.com/comicbookcentralnetwork, Twitter at comicbookctrl. It's all out there. You're going to get that episode when it drops. All right, from the fastest man alive to the big green Goliath, Lou Ferrigno. He made his Terrificon debut this year. Man, there's so many guests that were here in Comic Book Central. At first, they're making their first appearance at Terrificon. It was so cool to just get to catch up with these folks. Now, you longtime listeners know this isn't my first run-in with Big Lou. He's a friend of the show. In-depth interview, episode 24. That's where you can hear all about Lou's story and talking about the Incredible Hulk TV series back in the 70s. I also caught up with him right here in the Buckeye State at the Cincinnati Comic Expo on episode 44. By the way, I'm going to be taking the show on the road again this year to Cincinnati Comic Expo in the next few weeks, so stay tuned for that. You're going to want to check. Oh, so many guests coming up there. Not to digress, but you're going to want to check that out as well. That's coming at you in a few weeks. But here at Terrificon, it doesn't get more terrific than the Incredible Hulk. No CGI, no animation, just all pure Lou Ferrigno.
The big green Goliath himself makes his way to Terrificon. We've been in Cincinnati, so I enjoyed meeting you there. Thanks again for being on the show a couple of times. What has been your experience here at Terrificon so far?
Well, the people are great. I mean, you know, from Brooklyn, so just like in my backyard. And I meet a lot of fans. They remember watching my show 40-some years ago. I meet some friends that I've trained with 40-some years ago. And, you know, meet grandkids. They say how much their grandparents love the show. So it's a mix of everything.
What kind of projects do you got coming up now? Because I know you're doing a lot of conventions that you're doing. But what kind of projects can fans look forward to seeing you in right now?
The movie called Enter the Fire, kind of like a Karate Kid kind of film. I play the kind of mafioso kind of a character. And then the other one called Purge of Throne. It's a spoof of Game of Thrones. I filmed that last year, The Elite Castle. That'll be coming out 2019 over the summer.
What do you think of so far? Because the Hulk has been made a lot of different appearances. You've popped up in some of the Hulk movies. Not only we see you in them, hanging around with Stan Lee, but we hear you as the voice of the Hulk still in some of these. What do you think as far as the Hulk movie universe goes right now?
Compared to the series, because the new Hulk, I would think you could take him seriously because I think they're kind of downplaying it a little bit.
How so?
In the Infinity War, like for example, you want to see more of the Hulk, but like Mark Ruffalo. My opinion, I just think that the Hulk should be more feisty, not more comedic.
He seemed to not show up as much in the last
exactly.
movie, but when Thor Ragnarok, he
yep.
seemed to be...
Yep.
That's kind of like the Hulk we wanted to see, where he was like on almost Planet Hulk or War Hulk.
Exactly.
What do you think they should do with... I mean, it's a tough gig to make a Hulk movie because of the rights. I know that kind of goes back and forth. What would you like to see in a Hulk movie, and what part would you like to play in it?
I would love to play a character in a movie, maybe... It's hard to say because there's so many ideas coming across the board. They first should have a solo Hulk movie. They should have me. I encounter the Hulk maybe as a police officer, as a sheriff, or maybe as a military person where I have a background related to Bruce Banner.
You'd almost be playing yourself because you are a police officer.
Yeah, deputy sheriff, yeah.
Right. So, okay, well, I think we've talked about this a little bit before. Could you, like, if you saw somebody, if you saw something going down here, Could you do something about it? Like, could you arrest somebody?
Only when I'm on duty in L.A.
Okay, so this is only in L.A. But if you're at a Comic-Con in L.A. and things get out of hand, you can take care of business.
Of course.
And who's going to mess with the Hulk, right?
That's a good point.
What's your favorite part about this Comic-Con experiences? Because I know the show was a while back, but you were so busy. I mean, you were in the makeup chair for hours on end. Now you get to see the lives that you impacted, changed.
It's harvest time because when I began this series, Captain America and Spider-Man as a series failed. So I was like the pioneer. So that's why this show, I get that instant gratification, the reward back what I've done all these years, how much the fans appreciate what I've done with the Hulk, how much affected their life.
What is it about this TV series that we're still talking about it, that even little kids are coming up to your table and wanting to see the Hulk? What is it about this show?
Every episode has a laser compelling message about life, about anxiety, about depression, about murder, about drama. So when people watch it, like the original Twilight Zone, and you share your imagination with the Hulk. And for example, Bill Bixby in the show, David Banner, you talk about the ultimate bullying. When he gets bullied, watch out. So it's a great release because every one of us has a little Hulk inside of us as a power thing.
And it's almost like cathartic because people get to watch the show. They don't have to act out things, but they can watch you take care of business.
Deal.
Much safer to watch you doing things.
Thank you.
Websites, where can we go to find out more?
Facebook.com, LouFerrigno.com.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
You
enjoy your weekend.
Thanks
so much.
Oh, man, come on. Big Lou as a law enforcement officer encountering the Hulk? Incredible idea. Come on, Marvel. Come on, Disney. Come on, Kevin Feige. More Hulk and more Lou Ferrigno. Man, this stuff writes itself. That's a fantastic idea. Disney has all the money. It could happen. Come on, just bring Lou back into the movie. That'd be very cool. If it happens, I'm sure we're going to hear about it from Lou on his social media pages. The links, you know where to find them. They're in the show notes, so go check them out. All right, look, again, as I mentioned, another friend of Comic Book Central appearing for the first time at Trivicon. It was like old home week at the convention this past year. Man, the first actor to bring the amazing Spider-Man to life, the voice of Spider-Man from the 1967 animated series, Paul Soles. He was in Connecticut over the weekend. I spoke with Mr. Soles back on episode 90. You can hear his story. You can hear all about Hermie. You can hear all about Spider-Man on that episode. At Trivicon, I had a chance not only to chat with Paul, but also to meet Paul's son, Jonathan. Now, Jonathan has been scheduling Comic-Cons for Paul recently. He's been giving us all of us fans a chance to meet the talented man who provided the voice of Peter Parker, as well as Hermie the Elf from Rudolph. Now, before I chatted with Paul, I got to speak to Jonathan about the legacy of his legendary father.
My name is Jonathan Soles. My father is Paul Soles. He is an actor whose career has spanned over 65 years in every medium across North America. He started off on the stage and actually in radio when he was in university. And then he happened to be in the right place at the right time because he was in London, Ontario, Canada, which is a couple hours down the road from down the highway from Toronto. And he got a job working in radio. And he started working for the radio station in London, Ontario, which turned out to be the second purchaser of a private television license in Canada. So he was basically on television from the get-go in Canada. And in those days, there were no television personnel, so they just took the radio staff and put them on TV. So he excelled in that medium, and then he came back to Toronto, which is his hometown, and started working for the national broadcaster there, and the rest is history. So, but he started with stage, went to radio, TV. Stage is his true love, but in my opinion, his greatest strength is as a voice actor. So the two credits that he's most well known for, as your listeners would know, is Hermie the Misfit Elf in the 1964 Rankin and Bass Christmas special, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, and Peter Parker and Spider-Man in the 1967 to 1970 Spider-Man cartoon. What I wanted to say is just to your question a little earlier is...
Yeah, we were chatting because obviously these things are gone, but you're also apparently a fashion designer because this came up on our podcast. I said, you got this coolest jacket, and he's like, yeah, my son made it for me. You're the guy behind the jacket.
I wish I could lay claim to having any acumen or design skills. I really don't. All I can tell you is that it was a really tough sell helping my father to realize just how beloved and how widely known and loved he was for those two characters. He has done so many things. He's hosted, national television shows. He's been in many theatrical premieres. He's acted Shakespeare. He's done so many things. In the beginning, the idea that he would be so well known for these two characters was a disconnect for him, and it didn't seem like sort of top tier for him. And indeed, here's the funniest part. He didn't think that the love for Spider-Man and Hermie went really much beyond me and my friends. And I was like, oh, really? Tell you what, the next time you're on a set, just, let it drop that you did these voices. Well, holy moly, the camera operators, the grips, the lighting guys, everybody came out of the woodwork and asked him to sign stuff. So then he started to realize it. In addition to that, I, as a fan, I'm so proud of my father for the work that he did, but I'm also a huge fan. I was a fan of Spider-Man from the beginning. I would try to encourage him to participate in Comic-Cons my whole life, and he just said no. Then one day, a wonderful guy named Mike Mikowski from Windsor, Ontario, happened to call him out of the blue, and obviously was, drew him out with kindness and sincerity. And to my enormous, I won't say displeasure, but pleasant surprise, he agreed to go. And so now we've done, I think this is our sixth Comic-Con. So anyway, it's a wonderful thing. Now, sorry to skirt the issue.
No, he's
super modest, like painfully modest about his work, right? And so after the longest time of him sort of deferring and demurring and all this stuff, I just thought, this is ridiculous. So I took some of my own money and did a custom glory jacket. And I did, in those days, this is like 2004, I believe.
Yeah.
So I'm almost 15 years ago. In those days, he was really antithetical about the whole thing. He hadn't made the turn yet. Right. And so I thought when I made it, chances are he might not ever wear this, but I made a deal with myself that if he wore it out once, that would be good enough for me. Yeah. Now we won't leave home without it. When we come to the cons.
Yeah. I've seen that he can kind of wear it. Plus, you got the shirts now. So maybe we'll see him wearing the shirts now, too. But, honestly, to be the first actor to bring Spider-Man to life, that is just so significant. What's been your experience just seeing him with the fans? And, it's all the way, the age range just has to be amazing because this cartoon, this animated series has just touched so many lives.
It has. And I of course see it in the best possible light. There is a double-edged sword to it. Like, it's not all a happy circumstance, but he was very, very fortunate to get this gig. In the 60s, they did so many shows and they had no idea which one would have legs and which one wouldn't. He had his day job, his daytime talk show that he co-hosted. And, once or a month or so, maybe twice a month, he would go at 4 o'clock at the end of the day. He would go to get in his car, drive to a recording studio, and they'd sit down for 2 or 3 hours and hammer out 2 or 3 of the episodes. And they did that like every month over the course of the 3 years. So it was a side gig, but Spider-Man was one of many, and it just so happened that it had legs. So did Hermie. I actually have kind of lost track of what your question is. All I wanted...
Just the fan reaction you guys are
the
getting.
The fan reaction is amazing.
It's incredible.
Yeah. For the most part, it does skew to an older demographic because, let's face it, you would have had to have been, over 40 now, maybe even closer to 50, to have actually seen this stuff close to its inception. But it was syndicated everywhere, not just in North America. We have a, this is not a shameless plug, I promise you, we have a website called WalpinWebsnappers.com, which
Great
we made
stuff.
In 2004 to commemorate the voice actors, and we were able to put in a little Q&A, and we had respondents from all over the world, because unbeknownst to me, this stuff got dubbed, and it aired in Germany, it aired in, obviously didn't get dubbed into, it was in England, but it aired in Great Britain. I don't know if it made it to Asia. It was in Australia, I believe. But it's predominantly in North America, and it played in every market, big or small. That was a shocker to me. Now, I alluded to the... But I should also say, to your question again on the fan reaction, on a personal note, given what I've told you, it was enormously meaningful to me to go to that first Comic-Con, because you never know, right? I mean, you hope. And I it's not like I wanted to be vindicated. I was just, you know, hoping. And there we were. We show up at our table for our first ever Comic-Con ever. And there was like about 15 or 20 people lined up. And I was just like, you know, yeah. I know it sounds corny, but I was like holding back the tears. So the double-edged sword part of it is Spider-Man, not so much Hermie or Rudolph, but Spider-Man was really made on the cheap for ABC. And so it would have never had legs if Steve Krantz, the producer whose entrepreneurial idea this was, if he hadn't farmed out the work offshore or out of the United States where he could realize significant cost savings, particularly in the revenue sharing and ownership, I don't know that it would have been cheap enough that TV stations long before the multiverse would have purchased it, and therefore it wouldn't have been as widely known. So you got
to
take...
And to have that many episodes that it would work in syndication. I mean, that was huge that they were able to put out so many, too.
Yeah, and it was kind of a weird... Spider-Man is a little bit weird because, as viewers of it will know, it has two distinct elements. It has the first season, which was Grant Trey Lawrence and Steve Krantz making it, and it's very similar, and its plot lines and villains are all drawn from the comic book.
Yeah,
and as you'll notice from the credits at the end of the show, John Romita Sr., I think referred to as Jazzy
John. Jazzy John, yeah.
And Stan, I'm trying to remember what they...
Stan the Man Lee.
It could have been. It's some sort of sweet affectation like that. They were like consultants on the show. I don't know how much they had to do.
Yeah.
But then, for whatever reasons that I'll never know, I wish I had a chance to meet Steve Krantz before he passed. Yeah. He and Grant Trey decided not to do it, and it got given to Ralph Bakshi. Right. And that's why it's all trippy and, you know, sort of in that completely opposite direction.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's these two distinct elements, but three seasons, right.
Plus you got the DVDs, and now that's hitting a whole new generation, too. So it's amazing. I'm glad he's here. I'm glad he's got your jacket on. We're going to have some fun at the panel tomorrow. So, Jonathan, thank you so much for joining
me. Great talking to you. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, smiling Stan Lee. That was Stan the Man's credit on the 67 series. I thought it was, oh, look, of course you think it was Stan the Man, but I went back and checked it. Smiling Stan Lee. So, yeah, Jonathan was right. Look, a true classic series. If you haven't caught it, just, man, go check it out. Again, my interview with Paul Soles about the series and so much more, episode 90, you can check that out. But you are going to hear from the legend right now. Here is my terrific on chat with Paul Soles.
All right, well, Wallop and Web Snappers, I am here with the great Paul Soles. Mr. Soles, thank you for returning.
Easy, you're here with Paul Soles. Let's keep the adjectives
Thank you for returning.
Until the reviews are in.
Well, the reviews are in, and after your last performance on Comic Book Central, people rave about it. One of their favorite episodes.
Well, I'm glad to hear it.
So we thank you for telling your story. Okay, so you've got a few more of these comic conventions under your belt now.
Yes.
Okay, so you've put them off for so many years. Your son kind of got you into them. What's been your experience meeting the fans who loved your work over the years?
Well, I had two cases of scoliosis. No, I'm just joking. Scoliosis is actually spinal, so you can't get it from somebody.
Right.
Although there always is that.
You're not going to be doing
concern.
A charity event or something here for.
Well, you got to be careful.
All right.
But I loved the bubble and mirth and atmosphere. The picture of so many people who enter the spirit of this game with their costumes and makeup. And I don't know whether it's a need for another identity or what it is. But the fact that people are willing to kind of put on new colors, personalities, is great. It might mean life is awfully drab or terrible where they live, but the variety is terrific. And it's a delight that there's enough freedom still. People can express themselves this way.
If 2018 Paul Soles had a chance to meet 1966 Paul Soles as he's recording some Spider-Man dialogue, what would he say to him?
Grow up, young man. No, he'd say, lucky you, because it's this distance of time to give you a perspective of how lucky, fortunate, or unfortunate you were at certain points in your life. I have more appreciation these days of why the Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer story or show, as maudlin as it is when you think of the primitive stop-motion animation that was done, to understand what there is in the story that made it so enduring. And it's only in the last year or two that I've come to understand it, when I didn't 50 years ago. And it's because all of us have been marginalized sometime in our life, told we're not good enough or different enough or rich enough or pretty enough or something, and we're marginalized. And eventually you come to realize that even though you're thought to be different, doesn't mean there's anything wrong with you. And in Hermie's case and Rudolph's case, their willingness to be helpful helped everybody. Now, I don't want you to think I'm some kind of pinko socialist, but, you know, getting along or trying to seems to me to be more productive than bitching, bullying, biting, backstabbing can normally get you. And that's my message for today. That's the Reverend Soul.
Do you see sort of like people wanting sort of a throwback to some of these things because there is a charm to it? There is a charm to the simplicity of it.
In innocence, yes.
And there is a message.
Well, I won't say you're wrong by any means. No, I think you take a look at almost any of the enduring stories from Shakespeare on down. A Christmas Carol, to keep on the festive theme. There is a universal dilemma, need, problem that almost everybody runs into at some time or another. And that's why we have stories to remind us it's a common experience. And as the song says, you're not alone. You'll never walk alone. I'm not trying to be religious here, just saying it's important for all of us to know we aren't alone. And there's a way out usually.
Well, you are not going to be alone tomorrow. We're going to be on the stage with four of your fellow voice actors.
Looking forward to that.
And we talked about the jacket on the last episode. I'm so glad you wore it today. I was really hoping to see the jacket.
I would not. This is my son's great gift to me, and it's in the air conditioning. It's almost necessary.
Yes, this is perfect for it. So thank you, sir, for appearing on the show, and looking forward to the panel tomorrow.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Oh, man, I love me some Paul Soles. Who doesn't, right? Oh, he is amazing. The man helped to program my after-school afternoons back in the day. He probably programmed a lot of your afternoons back in the day as well. To meet the man in person, I highly recommend it. He's doing a lot more of these comic book conventions, so if you have a chance to check it out. Wallop and Web Snappers, that's the web. Wallopandwebsnappers.com, that's the website. That's where you want to go check it out, so be sure to check that out. Coming next week, Paul is part of that voiceover animation panel. It was amazing, and you will be hearing it right here on Comic Book Central. Again, wallopinwebsnappers.com, WALLOPIN, Websnappers. That's how you spell it. That's a website. The link, you know where to find it. Come on. Show notes, comicbookcentral.net, blogtalkradio.com/comicbookcentral. Everything you need online, you can find it in the show notes. All right, Trivagon has never jumped the shark. It never will. But one guest making his debut at the con this year, he has actually jumped a shark, and it was the coolest moment possible. He is the coolest man around. He's got his own Mego action figure. That Mego action figure was just re-released this summer. I've got it. It's very cool. It's got the thumbs up. Of course it does. And since I last spoke with him on Comic Book Central episode 45 at the Cincinnati Comic Expo. That's another cool show you want to check out. Oh my goodness, has it been that long? Episode 45, really? Okay, since I chatted with him last, he has appeared on two seasons of the reality TV hit series Better Late Than Never with George Foreman, Terry Bradshaw, and William Shatner. And not unlike the Cincinnati Comic Expo, Henry Winkler's fan line at Trivicon. It was long. I got to chat with him very briefly. He took a little bit of time at both shows. He was gracious enough this year at Trivicon to take a moment or two to chat with me. So here is my very brief chat with Henry Winkler.
Hey. So we're here with Henry. So how's your experience in Connecticut been here at Trivicon?
Well, you know, I went to Yale. So here at Trivicon, we're at the Mohegan Sun. I had Pepe's Pizza. How bad can it be?
I heard you did. Did you do a little gambling while you were here? How did you do?
I think I came out even, but at the end there, I was winning, and it's so much fun to win. I didn't care that I began losing.
There you go. Working with Shatner, I have to ask you about working with Shatner. Which was tougher, working with Shatner or working with Terry Bradshaw?
Terry Bradshaw is a walking heart.
Okay.
Bill Shatner has read every book on the planet and wants you to know what's on every page.
I thought the you going back home to see where you were from, where your family was from.
Where my family was from.
Sometimes when you watch reality shows, you can seem a little overproduced in some of these things. I thought that was an amazing moment. Can you tell
That's because we have an amazing producer, and his name is Jason Ehrlich.
It's an amazing moment. Where can fans get the books? And what books do we have here?
Oh, well, I have children's books for the first grade through the sixth grade. They're all on Amazon.
These are Hank Zipser?
They're the Hank Zipser, Here's Hank, or Ghost Buddy. And then I have my one book of photographs.
We just saw a few of them here. You're taking photographs. You got a book of photographs. What's it called?
It's called I Never Met an Idiot on the River.
There you go. And where can we go to get those?
That you can also find, I believe, on Amazon.
Excellent. Thank you, Mr. Winkler, for joining me today.
All right, let's wrap things up today with the man who, back in 2012, helped bring us Oliver Queen, a.k.a. the Green Arrow, on the super mega hit CW series Arrow. He is Mark Guggenheim. Now, Mark served as the co-showrunner for both Arrow and Legends of Tomorrow. Up until this coming up season, he continues as executive consultant on both shows. And when we talk about comic books, man, his comic book pedigree is secure. He has worked for both Marvel and DC Comics. He has written for The Flash. He's written for Green Arrow, so many of our favorite characters. He knows his superhero stuff. We are coming up on season 7 of Arrow, and I've got your Arrow preview right now with Mark Guggenheim.
All right, here with Mark Guggenheim. We're talking comic books, but we're also talking live-action comic books, too. So I guess the first question is, what can you tell us about the upcoming season of Arrow?
Oh.
Can you tell me any? It appears that Stephen Amell is getting beaten up on a daily basis, and he's complaining a lot about it.
You know, I tell you, we've been putting him through the ringer. I will tell you this. The idea that Oliver goes to prison, it's not something that we're just going to he'll be in the prison for the season premiere and then out by the end of the season premiere. We're really committing to this.
This is going to have some legs?
This will have some legs.
Okay.
Which is cool. We're committing to it. And prison's a tough place, and, you know, it's particularly tough. Oliver's like a cop, you know, who's been put in prison with all the guys that he busted.
And they know it.
And they know it. And that's the other thing that the show is not going to shy away from, is that, you know, he's now a public figure. You know, everyone knows that he's the Green Arrow. I think, you know, Beth Schwartz, the new showrunner, and the writing staff is doing such a great job. They've really embraced the ending of season 6. Like, all the fact that, you know, Diaz was still in the wind, the fact that Oliver was going to prison, the fact that Oliver's now out in public as, you know, the Green Arrow. They have leaned into that really hard, and they've been doing a terrific job.
Now, what's going to be your role through this next season? What are you going to be doing day to day?
I'm a consulting producer. Basically, what I do is I'll read scripts, I give notes, I'll have the big picture conversations. Like, you know, Beth and I were talking out this storyline, which I can't talk about because it's very spoilery. The other day, but that was a lot of fun. And I'll go in and I'll give notes on cuts. I'm sort of really there for whatever Beth and the writers and the production needs me to do. But it's, you know, like I said, it they've been doing a great job. And the show really feels like the show. And it's exciting to see.
How did your comic book writing skills play into getting this show off the ground, getting Arrow off the ground, and what you were able to bring into it Because live action, completely different, but, I mean, there are some elements you've got to keep the fan base happy, and you're kind of tied into both worlds.
You know, for me, it's very simple. I don't approach it so much as a comic book writer. I approach it as a comic book fan. You know, I think if you're going to do these characters live action, I don't know how you do it if you're not a fan of comic books. I think there are a lot of people who have tried and failed because fundamentally they didn't have respect for who the characters were and they didn't have respect for what the concepts were. If you feel like, oh, it's comic books, it's silly, or, you know, I'm embarrassed to be associated with these characters, you're not going to do a very good job. It's, you know, if you're always going to try to just change them to make them cool because you don't think they're cool in the first place, then you're really missing something because they are cool in the first place. You've got to, you know, you just have to show it in the best possible light. So, you know, I really approach it as a fan first. I'm a different kind of fan, I think, than most fans. I don't, as a fan, I don't need a literal translation of the comic to the screen. I, as long as the quality is good, if I just want to see a good TV show, I want to see a good movie. If I'm entertained, that's all I care about as a comic book fan. And I do bring that philosophy to the work I do as a producer of comic book television. That works for some fans. It doesn't work for all of them, you know?
Although, that having been said, so many times during the initial seasons, we had elements from the comic book brought in, like the boxing glove era, like little things that fans, comic book fans, would love. Like, whose idea was that, to bring little things, you know?
We're always, a lot of us are comic book fans, and in the writer's room, we're always saying, like, ooh, we call those Easter egg moments.
Yeah.
And we're like, ooh, there's an Easter egg moment here. We could do X, Y, or Z. And it really comes out of the writer's room.
But what's been your favorite that you brought into it?
My favorite was the moment in last year's crossover when Supergirl says to, you know, her overgirl, General, would you care to step outside? That for me, scratched a really big itch.
Did you write that? Or did you wrote that. So that was the one you've been dying to bring.
I wasn't dying to do it. It just the moment presented itself. Like, we were breaking the story, and we knew that there was going to be a point when Supergirl flew up to the Nazi wave rider, and I was like, you know what? If we just call Overgirl General enough times, she could say, General, would you care to step outside? Like, and that, I was like, I'm dying to do that. And that for me was a big thrill.
Looking forward, where do you want to see the show end up? If you, in an ideal world, final episode, because, like, you see Smallville, he runs off the roof and he's Superman, and the John Williams music soars. What would you, not to say that that's going to be the moment, maybe you're working toward it, I don't know, but what would you like to see?
I don't want to say, because
no problem.
What I hope I'll get to
see. It's a very leading question.
Yeah, I will say this, I've always known how I wanted to end the show. So my hope is eventually I get to do what I always wanted to do.
Is it working toward what you idealized as the ending of the show?
You know, until very recently, yes, but then we started talking about something else that would probably take the show down a path that was different from what I originally intended.
A better idea?
I would say a very exciting idea.
Okay.
A very exciting idea. I'm protective of spoilers.
But as a comic book fan yourself, you would be deliriously happy if either of those situations worked
absolutely.
Out.
Absolutely. I mean, honestly, like, again, the litmus test that me and quite frankly all the other writers, we really apply is, do we think this is cool? We're the first fans, you know, who are experiencing this. And again, it comes back to this philosophy of, we're going to approach this as if we're fans. And it's like, if it excites us and we think it's cool, then we think there's a chance that the other fans will think it's cool. If we don't think it's cool, then what's the point of doing it?
We're talking about the classic goatee, aren't we?
Oh, the goatee's coming. The
okay.
goatee is absolutely coming.
That'll be the one.
You know, there's a process that you have to go. When you have a show and you're going to radically change or even somewhat significantly change the look of the lead of the show, you have to run that past the studio and network. They have to approve these things. So we basically photoshopped Steven with a goatee so that we could show our studio network partners what it would look like, because otherwise how else would they approve it?
I'm guessing it looked pretty good if you're really good. Happy about it. So what do we have to look forward to? I mean, obviously Arrow coming up very soon, but what do we got comic book wise?
I've got a few things. I'm continuing to write X-Men Gold. It's winding down. There's a few more issues left. New seasons of Arrow and Legends of Tomorrow are coming out. We will be premiering Three Below, which is the first of the two Trollhunters spinoffs on Netflix. And then I'm working on a mess of stuff that I can't talk about yet because none of it's public.
That's the stuff we love because we know it's going to be good if you can't talk about
it. Well, I hope so. I mean, it's all really exciting. I'm doing some movie stuff. I'm doing another pilot, working on some additional comic book stuff. It's all coming together.
Social media, website, how do we find out everything as it happens?
I'm on Twitter. That's probably the best way to reach me. M. Guggenheim, on Twitter.
Looking forward to it. And looking forward to hopefully an in-depth interview on Comic Book Central. We want to find out what makes Mark Guggenheim tick.
When you know, let me know.
Thanks. Cool.
Arrow Season 7, it premieres Monday, October 15th. And you know I asked Mark about an in-depth interview for Comic Book Central while I was at Terrificon. I am happy to say he is totally down with that. It was good to hear. We are working on scheduling that right now, so stay tuned, kids. Mark Guggenheim will be back here in the lair as soon as we can make that happen. What's happening next is four Terrificon Q&As coming at you next week. You are on the bonus plan. Yes, you are. You're going to hear my chats with Spawn and Arrow's Michael Jai White, Guardians of the Galaxy's Palm Clementieff, my epic six-guest animation voiceover Q&A with Greg Sipes, Raphael Ferrar, Larry Kenny, Kari Payton, Charlie Schlatter, and Paul Soles, and wrapping things up next Saturday with Gotham's Solomon Grundy, Drew Powell. And I will say this. Get ready for two Golden Girls TV show themes. Sing along on those episodes are coming at you only at Terrificon, only on Comic Book Central. That is where you're going to find all the cool stuff. By the way, quick shout out to the team at theangrygeeksshow.com. You will be able to catch my animation VO panel, the video of that event. You are going to be able to catch that at theangrygeeksshow.com very soon. So stay tuned to their website for that. Big thanks to them, to Mitch Halleck, the Terrificon staff and the volunteers, all of my guests today. Again, four Terrificon episodes headed your way next week. Until then, keep being terrific to everyone you meet. Keep reading those comics, and thanks for joining me here in the lair. Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central. All other content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of the respective holders.
General, we've got inbound.
Then fire countermeasures.
We can't. It's hovering directly off our bow.
General, would you care to step outside?